This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 25th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 183. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The Cullen Commission. Highlights of testimony from ex-Premier Christy Clark. What did she know and when did she know it about corrupt casino cash? But first, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or were you not surprised at the bad budget news from Federal Liberal Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland and BC NDP Finance Minister Selena Robinson? Freeland delivered a budget on April 19th with a $155 billion deficit and a $1 trillion debt. The next day, 4/20, Robinson's budget forecast $9.7 billion deficit for British Columbia and a debt of $102.8 billion. All of the above are record numbers thanks to the pandemic. Here is Freeland.
Significant investments in our future. This is a budget that invests in growth. The investments this budget makes, these investments, because the investments we propose today.
Here is Robinson.
Mr. Speaker, we are making record investments. And our Stronger BC plan included record investments.
Did you notice the words that Chrystia Freeland and Selena Robinson used? As PJ O'Rourke once said, you'll note that politicians no longer spend money, they invest it. Don't worry about paying more. You aren't being taxed. You're taking a plunge on a fly-by-night stock issue. This is not a commentary that downplays necessary spending for healthcare, education, environmental protection, and public safety. Though I am puzzled why John Horgan needs another $3.3 million this year for his office staff when the Mental Health and Addictions Ministry gets only $23,000 more. This commentary is about using the right word. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, journalism is not a crime. RTHK producer says after convicted for public records search. Bao Choi is convicted of two counts of making false statements for citing traffic and transportation related matters as the purpose during the search for a car owner's registration information in a public register. She was slapped with a fine equal to $773. Choi said she was heartbroken. Quote, the court interpreted the search on public databases in the narrowest sense, which would restrict the free flow of information and create a very difficult scenery for all journalists. End quote. Choi traced the license plates of vehicles at Yuen Long, where a mob attack took place in 2019, and revealed that plainclothes officers were at the site. Her documentary won an award from the Hong Kong Journalist Association one day earlier. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan willing to share homegrown COVID vaccines with allies. Two Taiwanese vaccine manufacturers, Medigen Vaccine Biologics Corp. and United Biomedical, announced that their vaccine candidates have entered phase 2 clinical trials. They said antibody tests for the vaccine hopefuls indicate satisfactory efficacy against variants from both the UK and South Africa. Taiwan is currently administering AstraZeneca vaccine doses that it purchased directly from the company and secured through COVAX. The Central Epidemic Command Center has said the country will likely receive 5.05 million doses of the Moderna vaccine in May and have its domestic shots ready by July. In the Japan Times, Tokyo Olympic torch staffer becomes event's first COVID-19 infection. A police officer in his 30s who is helping with Japan's Olympic torch relay has become the first participant in the event to be diagnosed with COVID-19. The officer was guiding traffic in the town of Naoshima on Saturday and came down with a fever on Sunday, the Asahi newspaper reported. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, protesters caused nearly $20,000 in damage to Northeast Portland Boys and Girls Club. Protesters calling for racial justice damaged the club that houses services for mostly black and brown children and families in Portland. Portland police have said the bureau is, quote, discussing and planning, quote, for the possibility of sustained civil unrest in the coming months, similar to what the city experienced last year after the death of George Floyd under the knee of a Minnesota police officer. In the Seattle Times, after fireballs streaked across the sky, space junk sleuths got busy and hit the jackpot in Washington. People across the Pacific Northwest were awed on the evening of March 25th. Astronomers promptly demystified it as debris from a falling SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. Chunks fell to Earth in eastern Washington. At least one came uncomfortably close to hitting people. Denser parts, such as engine cores, may even have reached the mountains on the border between Montana and Canada. The U.S. estimates that nearly 1,800 rocket bodies are currently orbiting Earth among tens of thousands of smaller objects. In Czech news, Nanaimo teacher fired after checking out inappropriate graphic novel to student. Teacher librarian Matthew Lettington was in charge of selecting and buying books for the city's school library. In 2017, he bought a book called La Lesbienne Invisible that contained images of nudity, sex, and drug use. He was supposed to have reviewed the book, but it ended up on shelves in 2019 and was checked out to a grade 8 student. A parent complained, and Lettington was fired. It was not the first time that he had ordered a graphic novel for the library. He was suspended in 2016 for 5 days. And these headlines in the Breaker.News this week. Salmon farming lobbyist helped craft North Island mayor's opposition to federal phase-out. Judge tosses anti-maskers patently absurd and nonsensical lawsuit. And the Breaker.News forces Delta Police to reveal PR contractor's name. Read the stories behind the headlines in the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Ms. Clark, do you solemnly affirm that the evidence you show give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And please state your full name and spell your first name and last name for the record.
Christina Clark, C-L-A-R-K.
That is a clip from the morning of April 20th on the Cullen Commission public inquiry into money laundering in British Columbia. For the Cullen Commission, lawyer Patrick McGowan. The witness, Christy Clark, the former Premier of British Columbia.
You were first elected as an MLA in 1996?
Yes.
And served as an MLA from 1996 till approximately 2004?
Yes.
And
during the years of 2005.
And during the years of 2001, I believe till 2004, you held cabinet posts?
That's right.
I wonder if you could just tell the commissioner what posts in cabinet you held during those years.
I started with education and deputy premier and finished with children and families.
Okay, thank you. And then from 2005 till 2011, you left government and worked in the private sector?
I did.
I wonder if you, just in an overview fashion, you could tell the commissioner what you were occupying yourself with during those years.
I'm sure the commissioner was listening. I was on CKNW as I hosted the Christy Clark Show for most of that time.
Thank you. You successfully ran for the leadership of the Provincial Liberal Party in 2011?
2010. I started the campaign and I was elected at the end of February 2011 and then was sworn in as premier in March 2011.
And you ultimately served as the premier of this province from 2011 till 2017.
That's right.
Right off the bat, Clark omitted her middle name, which is Joan, and she also failed to mention that she once worked as a lobbyist during her time out of provincial politics, most notably for a company run by the RCI Capital Immigrant Investor Fund. For the next 2 hours, Clark was asked what she knew and when she knew it about the corruption in BC casinos and real estate. During her time as a CKNW talk show host before she returned to politics in 2011, Vancouver media outlets were already abuzz about crime in casinos, including gamblers arriving with hundreds of thousands of dollars in hockey bags. But Clark was apparently unaware.
Were you aware that GPEB investigators had been raising concerns about the possibility that at least some of these large cash buy-ins and 20s might be proceeds of crime since 2010 or 2011?
Well, I mean, I wasn't, as I said, I wasn't being kept abreast of the large cash buy-ins and the reports from law enforcement specifically, and what law enforcement was doing in response to that. You know, my assumption was, and I think appropriately so, that when law enforcement received reports of suspicious transactions, that law enforcement was acting on that, gathering evidence, you know, proving their case, and then prosecuting it.
Were you aware that during your time as premier, the bet limit rose on high limit gaming to the point where a single player could wager up to $100,000 on a single hand of baccarat?
No.
Are you surprised to learn that somebody could bet that much on a single hand?
Well, I have to say, I don't know a lot about, you know, I don't gamble. So I don't know what's normal in a casino. But you know, again, you know, Mr. McGowan, I wasn't involved in the day-to-day operations of ministries and of Crown corporations. So it's not something a premier would normally be advised about. I don't expect, because there are so, you know, the premier is sitting atop 20 ministries, each of which have tons of really important issues, and not everything can be reported or is reported back directly to the premier. But what the premier can do is set in place plans and charge each of her ministers with meeting those plans. And then rest assured, if you've got great deputies, which we did, that the progress in meeting or failing to meet those plans would be reported back. That's really how the system works, rather than a day-to-day kind of management, because the system wouldn't work if the premier was managing every single ministry and every element of law enforcement.
I want to give you an opportunity to address the commissioner on whether you ever turned your mind to the possibility that proceeds of crime might be being used to buy in at British Columbia casinos and in turn be contributing to the province's revenue.
Well, I wouldn't have framed it that way in my mind. The way I framed it was illegal activity in BC casinos is a big problem. And, you know, remember when a previous government long ago created the gaming industry in British Columbia and decided that it would be government run, it did so with the understanding, you know, with the intention that if it was run by the government, that it would be better regulated than if it was just run in the private sector. You know, sort of, I imagine they thought it would be sort of a similar approach to having government sell liquor. That if government is selling liquor, which is also has a lot of social harms attached to it, that there would be better regulation, ability for regulation on it. So, you know, that was the approach with gaming, to make sure that regulation was done and well done. But the idea was never to try and get revenue at the expense of public safety or public confidence in our casino system. Stopping crime, stopping money laundering was always a primary concern, way over and above the revenue that came from BC Lotteries.
Christy Clark also denied that money laundering was a factor in the real estate boom.
Whether, to your knowledge, your government took any steps during your time as premier to investigate whether housing prices in British Columbia might have been influenced by possible illicit proceeds being parked in the British Columbia real estate market?
I can say no one from law enforcement, from the Solicitor General's ministry, from the Ministry of Finance, from anywhere in government or in law enforcement ever suggested that the rise in housing prices was a result of money laundering. I mean, it was pretty obvious. I mean, we had the strongest economy in Canada. We had the best job growth numbers in Canada. We had, people had more take-home pay because we had the lowest taxes in Canada. And it's a beautiful place to live. We had huge amounts of in-migration from across the country. And we had, to a lesser extent, immigration from other countries. For all of those reasons, plus interest rates were very, very low. So those were the reasons that, you know, I believe that the housing market was going up. And, you know, this is still a beautiful place to live. And even in a pandemic, we've seen now housing prices have gotten even more out of control. The crisis has gotten even worse in the last 4 years. So, you know, I think that there are very significant factors at play. You know, in our case, it was a very strong economy, a lot of jobs, and therefore a lot of immigration combined with low interest rates.
During your time as premier, were you ever advised of an investigation on the topic of the possibility of proceeds of crime being sourced potentially from a money services business and being used to buy into British Columbia casinos?
No, although I've seen it in the media since.
Yes. Other than from the news, were you provided any information about ePirate during your time as premier?
I wasn't.
Were you aware that in 2015 or by 2015, the RCMP had advised executives at the British Columbia Lottery Corporation that they believed organized crime was involved in providing proceeds to patrons to buy into British Columbia casinos?
No, not specifically. But again, you know, the work that was being done, our government had taken a whole range, long list of actions to address money laundering. So my assumption is that that work that we did would have been helpful in helping police identify the problems and collect evidence and prosecute those problems, and that BCLC would have been being cooperative in that because that was their direction from government.
I'd like to ask you just a couple of questions on the topic of donations. During your time as premier, did your party accept donations from gaming service providers in the province of British Columbia?
Only in the last 2 years that I was the premier. Before that, our party hadn't. Every party in British Columbia has accepted gaming proceeds, gaming donations. Our party stopped doing that in 2001, and we were the only party in British Columbia that didn't accept gaming donations until 2015, when what our party did was went through a constitutional renewal process and, you know, went through a constitution that had, you know, I think been there as far back as Art Lee when he was the leader, and Gordon Wilson and Gordon Campbell. And it was a long history to it, and it was a bit of a mishmash. They decided they wanted to make it a foundational document, which is what a constitution is supposed to be. And so one of the things that came out of that was the ban on gaming donations, which I don't think exists in the constitution of any political party anywhere in Canada.
Okay. During the time period...
But I wasn't involved in any of those discussions. I mean, that was the constitution of the party is the business of party members. And they spent probably 2 years working on it.
Okay. I've been told that some publicly available sources suggest that a couple of gaming service providers, Gateway and Great Canadian, donated to your party during the time you were premier amounts in the six figures. Is that something you're aware of?
It could be. And I don't know how much they would have donated to the New Democrats and other parties. I'm sure that they did as well. That would be typical for most donors to give to both parties. But you know, I would say, remember an election spending limit, parties typically spend about $10 million in British Columbia, or did then, on an election. So if it was $100,000, it would be, you know, it's a significant amount, but it's still a fraction of the total amount that's contributed to a party. And my view of the reason people gave money to my party, wherever they were from, was because we believed in a strong economy, we believed in lower taxes, and we believed in smaller government, and we believed in more jobs for people. And so, you know, people, there are different philosophies that different parties bring, and people donate to those parties based on the ones that are closest to their big philosophical view of, you know, where they want the province to go.
Do you have a view, given your experience, as to the advisability of a party-forming government taking sizable donations from gaming service providers who the government is charged with regulating?
Well, government, you know, political parties still to this day take donations from organizations and businesses across the province that we regulate. So forestry companies donate to political parties. That's a regulated business. Mining as well. Liquor companies, also regulated. I mean, you could go right across. Pharmaceutical companies, also regulated. So, I mean, there's a lot of that exists right across government. So, you know, it's not unique to gaming by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, but again, most donors give money to all the political parties they're allowed to. For the most part, they weren't allowed to give it to the BC Liberal Party.
Elections BC's database shows Gateway Casinos donated more than $220,000 to Clark's 2017 re-election bid. Great Canadian Gaming donated $127,000 during the same period. After the NDP took over from the BC Liberals in 2017, the NDP government banned corporations and unions from donating to political parties and candidates. They also limited donations to $1,200 a year. Since quitting politics in 2017, Clark became a senior advisor at the Bennett Jones Law Firm, even though she is not a lawyer, and she is also a director on the boards of Shaw Communications, Constellation Brands, and Recipe Unlimited, the parent company of The Keg and several other restaurant chains. The Cullen Commission continues until mid-May. Former Gambling Minister Rich Coleman is scheduled to testify April 28th, former Solicitor General Cash Heed on April 30th, Commissioner Austin Cullen has until December to report his findings and recommendations to the NDP cabinet.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the doctors, nurses, and paramedics working on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic everywhere in the world, and a special nod to those involved in the production, transportation, and delivery of vaccines. Thank you. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm.
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 25th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on April 25th in 1983, Samantha Smith, a schoolgirl from Maine, was invited to visit Moscow by Soviet leader Yuri Andropov after she wrote him a letter asking why he would want to start a nuclear war with the U.S. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's P-A-T, REOM.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.